Hello, could I have everybody maybe come to their seats? Before the final plenary wrap-up, we have the winners of the poster session. There were 17 posters and some additional ones. It was a very difficult decision to make, and I want to thank the other two judges very much for helping with this decision. So we're going to call, we have two, we decided to have two, so we have an honorable mention, so we'll call on that person first, and it is also the director of the Institute is here now, so.
Thank you very much. So, is this an S?
Yes, Saberi.
No, yes. Nassim Saberi receives an honorable mention for her poster presentation. Congratulations, Nassim.
Okay, yeah, come on. So we just wait, should we smile and look at the photo? Okay, great. Okay, oh. Okay, thank you.
And the first prize winner is Genevieve Metzen for her poster presentation. Congratulations.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. Chandra just the dean just reminded me of something. We want to thank very much Erin Hogg, who sponsored the award for the posters. She did so last year, and she did so again. And unfortunately, she could not be here to do the presentation. So if we could give her a round of applause for thanking her. And the names of the posters, I know I'm going to get this wrong, but it was Genevieve's was Phosphorus in the Diet, and I believe she's on the left side. And Nassim's was Food Security and Sodium and Gluten in basically in the diet, so both ways, and on the right side over there. So you can take a look at the winning posters and before you go. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Caroline, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who have attended the conference in the past, and for those of you brave souls who managed to stay to the very end, you deserve a medal. And I have in the past conferences used this as an opportunity to give a sort of a wrap-up of the key points that I thought emerged from the conference. However, these are simply my biased viewpoints from what I heard, and I didn't hear everything. I will certainly admit to that. And so I've invited a very distinguished blue ribbon panel to add their comments to supplement what I will say. And then, of course, it is your conference, so we will open it up to you to also add your voices to the conference so that we capture what you have taken away and what you would like to see for the future of the conference. So this year's conference was very much on the theme of food prices and political instability, and I thought that from the presentations that we've had both yesterday and today, it was a very aptly chosen title. Well, we started off with the presentation by Jean Labelle, the keynote presentation by Jean Labelle, the Vice President of IDRC, and also the gift by Mrs. Margaret Gillam of $1.5 million to support the work of the Global Food Security Institute. And I guess the take-home message there for our students is that if you buy a few sheep, buy a few goats, and you raise these in good economic times, you could all have the privilege of making millions of dollars if you didn't think about it before. And then I'll probably sound like my colleague Mark Weinstein, the vice principal of development at McGill, to say that once you've made your millions, then of course you could turn 1.5 or even more over, Julian, to McDonald and McGill for the work of global food security. So I hope you've taken heart from her message, and the reason why you've stayed to the very end is that you're going to use all the fantastic knowledge that you've obtained. The next day we had the keynote address by Dr. Prabhu Pingali from the Gates Foundation, who heads their agricultural program. And he talked about higher food prices and volatility as major concerns for agricultural communities around the world. In the less developed countries, productivity of smallholders need to be enhanced through research and development that's targeted at crop improvement to the poor. And so more emphasis on some of the less well-known crops than the major cereals of rice, wheat, and maize that we have we know traditionally. The need for increased input supplies, infrastructure investments in agriculture, and a regulatory and policy environment that provides incentives to increase agricultural production. In the emerging economies, production growth will come from an integration of smallholders into the retail chain, so it's going above and beyond primary production into the value-added chain, and that we need to enhance production in regions within these countries. So overall, while countries like India and China show extremely good progress towards food and nutrition security, there are regions in these countries in particular, but for several other emerging economies, in which they lag behind, and more emphasis needs to be placed on those parts of those countries which lag behind. We went to the session on the challenge of feeding 9 billion people. And as Marco Ferroni said, and I also believe in this when we look at the success of the Green Revolution and what it did to avert us from disaster back in the 60s when we saw massive famine on the Indian subcontinent, that there's optimism through human ingenuity that we hope will once again rise during this period of food insecurity to be able to meet the challenges of food production. There's a new definition of food security, and that is a population adequately fed by farmers who are there by choice. And so these are farmers who are not pushed into farming simply because they've inherited ancestral lands, but how do we support those in terms of food security? And farmers must be able to make a decent living, which I think every one of us would agree with, no debate on that. And that in Africa, a decade of economic growth has fostered change and improved prospects for agriculture. But there is a requirement for tailor-made solutions at the local level in order to improve farm productivity, provide services, and access the market. So each country having its own response to food security. We came to the session on the socio-political dimensions of food security and the need to distinguish between food price spikes and food shortages. I thought we had some excellent presentations yesterday afternoon on some of these definitions and challenges to conventional wisdom that we have tended to go with before. And the example of price, the price of rice that tripled in 2008 due to trade policies, that there was actually not a shortage of rice during that period, but it was due to trade policies that caused that spike. International food prices versus domestic food prices, the need for us to look at how we interpret the FAO and World Bank data on global food prices, and that there are differences in domestic prices and different from what is exported, and some of these are location specific and may be isolated from international prices by government policies as well. And India is a well-known example here. And then some of the other definitions that were challenged in terms of or brought forward in terms of angry people versus hungry people. People become angry and politically active because their disposable income is being squeezed, and the hungry people mostly live in the rural areas and tend to have less political influence. Question of land acquisition and land grabs. It's not the first time this has come up at our conference. It's come up before, and that acquisition agreements between countries involve a willing buyer, willing seller. However, a national government may also grab land from its people, often without consent or compensation. So an added aspect to the land grabs. We had an excellent presentation from our visitor from Ethiopia, and I think from all the comments I've heard in the room, it was a very different presentation than we have seen. I heard somebody mention today, this morning, is the question period, we need to get farmers from every part of the world. We've tried to get farmers from every part of the world, but that is very difficult in terms of financial support to bring them and also to get visas. It's not that easy for people to get visas to be able to attend the conference. So I think we were very lucky to have our colleague from Ethiopia join us, and certainly a very brave soul in terms of the points that she raised and the fact that we need more food processing technologies, storage technologies to add value to products, product labeling and tracking to be developed, and then the work on the mobile phone system to be able to move supplies from one place, one part of the country, to another part of the country, especially in Ethiopia, which is a large country and very difficult access to move products. And that although producers make a small profit, this needs to be increased, and we can increase this by adding the value chain as she shown in some of her slides yesterday. Rising food prices harm net buyers and benefit net sellers, while high price volatility harms net sellers more than buyers. And so that distinction between volatility, spikes in food, and rising food prices, and it affects different segments of the society in different ways. High food prices and price volatility are different problems which require different solutions, and food price volatility is not well understood at the international level. At the domestic level, there are many factors, including weather shocks, poorly developed market infrastructure, unpredicted changes in government policies. And as we heard, I think both yesterday from Dr. Roll from FAO, and today again, the need for an agricultural market information system started a year ago by the G8 countries to help to increase knowledge and transparency of food supplies to get a better handle around food prices and food price volatility. And the domestic response in terms of trade policies, buffer stocks, and stable floor prices for farmers, quite different from the international responses. The question of social unrest and food prices, I think, was again well articulated and well defined by some of our speakers yesterday, that the spikes in international cereal prices coincided with social unrest in 2008 and 2011, but did not do that in 2009 and 2010. And some of our speakers who looked at the cause-effect relationship between food prices and political unrest, quite different in how people respond in different places and different countries, and not always the same response. The wealthy are able to pay higher food prices compared to those in rural areas, and the wealthy can better withstand food price shocks and price volatility than those in the rural areas. Public feelings of injustice and outrage at high food prices, and one of our speakers yesterday from the University of Guelph, who talked about the difference between the moral economy and the market economy, and some very graphic illustrations that he presented there, and that some of these feelings of injustice and outrage at prices and more being moved by the moral persuasion may trigger more political volatility than expensive food on its own. Food reserves as a solution to price volatility. Biggest surges in wheat prices occurred when stock-to-use ratio went below 21%. It was mentioned by one of our speakers here from the Food Grains Bank that India has established a food reserve since 1964 for storage of wheat and rice, and that was part of the pre-Green Revolution era in order to be able to deal with hunger and famine on the Indian subcontinent. And the need to provide remunerative prices to farmers, minimum support price after each harvest, and that subsidized sales to the poor are sometimes necessary. Governments buy food at high prices and then subsidize it locally to resell to their citizens in order to avoid political instability. This whole question about the social governance of food reserves, who pays, who benefits, who decides, I think there was a call from our speaker from the Canadian Food Grains Bank to look at this whole social governance aspect of food reserves. Politics and food, he had a very interesting, some interesting presentations. We saw a presentation by Dr. Gao on China, one of our largest economies in the world, largest populations in the world. And as he pointed out, China has to feed 21% of the world's people with 6% of the world's water and 9% of the world's land resources. And because of the large size of China's population, nearly a quarter of the world's population resided in China, food security in China is not just an issue for China, it is a global issue. Could you imagine if there were problems of droughts or floods, as sometimes happens in China, and food became scarce, what that would do in terms of pushing food prices up because of the large demand for food, and the impact that that could also have because China has enormous buying power. It has lots of reserve and cash reserves that it can buy up food outside of China. What that would do to food supplies in other countries, one has to think about the impacts of that. And so I'm pleased that our colleague from China, Dr. Gao, has been able to come and make this presentation. And the Chinese central government, recognizing the importance of these statistics here and the ability to feed 21% of the world's population, has created this paper, number one as he called it, to accelerate water sector reform and development to increase food production. First time in the history of China such a paper has been promulgated by the Chinese government. And a lot of work going on in terms of water savings technologies in China to be able to save water in order to grow more food. In sub-Saharan Africa, demographic transition between now and 2025 will result in the addition of 300 million youths, and 195 million of them will be in rural areas, 135 million in cities. Be brought into the labor market, how does one find jobs for these people in those areas, and how does that help with food security? A lot of unanswered questions there. Public policies and investment that support agricultural intensification of smallholder farmers need to provide millions of jobs and enhance food security to prevent widespread unemployment and social upheaval. So we saw some living examples of that yesterday. Contrast with the Middle East, for example, which imports about 30% of the globally traded grain. These countries have very limited resources to produce their own food and are worried more by possible export restrictions of food trade partners than by food prices, and therefore this feeling of being food insecure. And foreign land acquisitions and food storage are possible options for food security with international implications. I was very pleased that Caroline and others have been able to organize a student session, which we've done in the past. This year we did in a different format, and we saw four excellent presentations, one from St. Lucia by Arlette, if she's still here, on the ability to use farmer networks and her network mapping that she did to better understand structural constraints that limit knowledge exchange and uptake of innovation. In India, the importance of millet as a highly nutritious food, fast-growing crop that withstands drought and poor soil nutrition, be enhanced through post-harvest technological innovations. Organic agriculture is growing in popularity and can reduce the environmental cost for agriculture. Yields tend to be lower, but it can be promoted in developing countries where labor and inputs are available. And we saw a presentation again by the students on one of the students on the Action Against Hunger Canada program and the uses of standardized monitoring and assessment of relief and transition, known as SMART, to collect information on the mortality rate of population and the nutritional status of children under five. And so, again, there was several presentations both yesterday and today that talked about data collection and data needs. This morning we had a panel that looked at the role of societal actors and the whole question of social dimensions of food security and nutrition came up as well this morning. And something that we have known from previous conferences, and we actually had a session on it at previous conferences, but again, this year, this morning, was that the difference between food security and nutrition security and the need to link agriculture, food, nutrition, and health for overall global food security. Employment in the U.S. jumped in 2008-2009, but food insecurity did not. And this is likely because of the social safety nets programs that exist in the U.S. So, again, it shows that there are countries that have the ability, the capacity to develop buffers in different ways. And food security in Canada, about 40% lower than the U.S., but this is very spatially aggregated data that would differ. If we went to the north of Canada, be quite a different number. In Mexico, the use of data that's generated by researchers to drive policy directives, I thought was a very important point of how research institutions can work together with policymakers, and that the regular production of statistics help to promote transparency and accountability. So I think that's another key point of how we can use these information management systems to collect data, generate data, to be able to predict food shortages, food scarcity, but at the same time promote transparency and accountability. And I thought that another interesting point was that while economic growth in South Asia has taken place quite strongly, as we've seen, it has not translated into better levels of nutrition. So there again shows that there are other factors that one needs to incorporate into programs to be able to economic development programs to achieve better levels of nutrition. And again, a point that was emphasized at this conference and previous conferences is that undernutrition impairs human and economic development. In terms of societal actors, we saw the presentation from the International Dairy Federation on the global agenda of action in support of a sustainable livestock sector, and that this sector will have to evolve to cope with future changes. The growing competition between local populations and investors for land came up again in terms of land grabs, and that international companies realize that their reputations can be harmed in the North American media, and therefore they need to recognize a bit better how they deal with food security issues among local populations. A portion of undernourished population in Central Asia is dropping, as we heard from the presentation by Dr. Duchovny, and he talked about workers outside of agriculture have greater capacity to purchase food compared to those, ironically, who work in the agricultural sector. And I thought that is a very important point that we should bear in mind. And yesterday, somebody presented some statistics that showed how the return on investment in agriculture in an agrarian-based country, has a much greater impact on economic development than countries that invest in other sectors. For food security to be achieved, greater emphasis must be placed on extension services for water and land use in agriculture and the development of the water users associations and this integrated water resources management, land and water resources management program that I had the pleasure to work with Dr. Duchovny and Dr. Galina in the Fergana Valley, I think was is a very interesting model for the achievement of food security. Only about 43% of our markets in developing countries are connected to international markets, I think is another important statistic that we drew from the conference, and that the long-term management of responses to food price spikes require identification of sources of local food price shocks and price volatility and the need to better manage public stocks. So those are the points that came to my mind. I know that the panel will bring additional points, and you will also have points that you would like to add. So I would now like to introduce the panel. You've seen them all before at the conference. Professor Mohamed Eid Kadi, who is the Director General of the Morocco Council on Agricultural Development, the Senior Advisor to the King of Morocco on Agricultural Policy and Development. Dr. Adia Barnett, the Director General of the Office for ICA, the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation of Agriculture in Canada. Joanne Gaskill, who finished her PhD at Stanford University in food security with someone that we gave an honorary doctorate to a couple of years ago, Wally Falcon. And you're at UC Berkeley, so a brilliant young scholar in food security that we like to have amongst us, and also our director for the institute, Hugo, is also here. So why don't we go in order, and so Mohamed, I turn the floor over to you, please, for your reflections and comments.
Thank you very much, Dean Chandra. It is an honor and privilege to serve in this panel, but I should recognize that this is also a very difficult task. I think your very comprehensive synthesis shows how rich was this fifth conference. And as I said this morning, it is always very intellectually stimulating and really a space of convergence. So I will share with you just a few points that I had marked in my notes. First one is really this conference. During this conference, we have been made aware of the complexities and the multidimensional facets of food and nutrition security. So I think policymakers and social actors need to be equally aware of all the issues that we have discussed. Political will is necessary, but we need more political skill. Second, I have seen really and felt a determination among all the participants to promote the strengthening of the various processes to define appropriate approaches to food and nutrition security challenges. We did acknowledge the need to enable concrete action supported by robust scientific and empirical research. Fourth, this conference was marked by the clarifications it has brought to the definitions and the concepts. These clarifications are, in my view, necessary to define the appropriate policy instruments. Fifth, we acknowledge the fact that despite noteworthy advances in food production, the war on hunger and undernutrition is far from being over. There are short and long-term causes behind this situation. Of course, one of the primary long-term causes is the decreased investment in agriculture. With this decline in agricultural investment, have come declines in productivity and sustainability. Meanwhile, the emergence of other factors, the energy, economic and financial crisis, climate change, increased urbanization, and increasing competition on land and water, as well as their rapid degradation, has deepened the needs of the poorest and decreased the challenge of solving the food and security problems. Therefore, we should make full use of the social capital we have built during these five conferences and carry the commitment that together we have made. And finally, I would like to extend my warm congratulations to the students who presented to us their research works. And I would like to echo what Bruce Moore told them. And I will conclude with these words of Amin Malouf. Amin Malouf is a famous writer and thinker from Lebanon. He said, "New challenges require new solutions." And this is in the hand of the young generation. Thank you.
Afternoon, all. My name is Audia Barnett. I'm Jamaican, and you know that Jamaica has the fastest human being on earth. So I'm going to be very, very quick this afternoon. Plus, I've been warned by a fellow Jamaican here to be brief. I want to thank Dean Madremoto for the opportunity. And instead of actually sharing with you some of the high points, because I think Dean did it so well, I'm going to share with you just a couple observations that I have made as ICA, the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. First of all, I think there are several common threads throughout the last 2 days, and I want to congratulate the team who brought together such a rich diversity of experts and of thinkers as well as practitioners. And as someone asked about the farm, we still had the input from the farming sector straight along the value chain. So I thought that was great. But one of the threads that I took away from the last 2 days was the importance of ICT, information and communication technologies. We saw it in the students' presentation in terms of using social media. We know of what happened in Tunisia. We see the power of social media right now. We also see the value of data mining, collecting information, assessing the information, and making predictions and making sound policy decisions based on the information gained. So many of the developing countries have a weakness in terms of actually collecting data. And I think, to me, this stood out as one of the take-home messages that we need to ensure that we collect accurate data, relevant data, and then we monitor it and we assess it so that we can apply the relevant solutions in our own national and regional as well as global context. I want to also note the dimension with the students. I really felt young when I heard the students, but also when I looked at the posters, because I thought that it brought that dimension of anything is possible. Looking at urine this is a practice from way back when, but seeing the scientific analysis and seeing the students actually making a mix of the traditional, the old, as well as bringing in new concepts and trying to explore the various areas to impact on communities throughout both the hemisphere and beyond. I want to congratulate the students because some students who didn't even do the research, but they I don't know what the prize was, must have been something appealing, but they actually did the desk research and put together, they sat down and thought it through and put together some concepts on posters. So I thought that was really refreshing, and it showed that McGill has managed to maintain that level of interest within the student body in terms of food security and making an impact globally. Just finally, there are two areas that I would have liked to have seen in the discussions. And one, noting that we just celebrated World Food Day, and noting that the SOFI report for 2012 just came out, I think if we had more time, and maybe in the future, we could have roundtable discussions, focus on the relevant observations, recommendations that the report, the SOFI report highlighted, as well as looking at some of the issues that on the agenda for World Food Day, you know, in terms of the theme selected for each year. I also thought that maybe we could explore the role of technologies on food prices. We got the distinction between price volatility and increase in prices, but I think we skirted a little bit around the matter of how technologies such as agrobiotechnology impacts price, food prices, and the agriculture landscape throughout the world. I really think McGill is doing a tremendous job in this area in the food security, the Global Food Security Institute. I think Chandra managed to get a gem in Hugo, and I look forward to participating in the future. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. So on the very first session, on the very first day, Professor Parlberg gave what he described as an anti-alarmist presentation on the connection between food price volatility and political stability. And I, after this conference, I just want to say that I remain alarmed. And I learned that even in the United States, over 14% of households are food insecure. Professor Fraser mentioned again on the first day the importance of moral outrage in solving the world food crisis. And I want to say that I took away from this conference, and I hope that all of us did, a bit of moral outrage. The second point that this conference really drove home for me is that there are important disagreements, even if we agree on the scope of the problem, that we have important disagreements among us about the causes and the solutions of global food insecurity. We have disagreements over whether it's the levels of prices or the volatility. We have disagreements about what to do. So Dr. Roll showed what I thought was a very interesting graph about how the prices of imported food commodities are more stable than the prices of domestically produced food crops. And I thought, okay, so the role of trade is maybe more important than we considered. We had debates about the importance of food stocks, whether the costs of managing food stocks are worth it in terms of the outcomes. And we had discussions about what is the role of food sovereignty and what is the role of access to land in food security. So all of those I thought were very important debates. Finally, my third point is, or the third thing I will take away from this conference is the tremendous work of McGill students. I want to say from Nassim's work on food baskets and nutrition in Canada, to Ramesh's work on millets in South Asia, to Arlette's work on the importance of social networks and information sharing, again, in solving the food price crisis. I think this conference was a tremendous example of information sharing, and I congratulate the organizers on the success.
I want to start expressing my gratitude to the colleagues who made this conference possible, starting with the colleagues who sat outside of this room, making our lives a bit easier, a lot easier in many times, during our discussions and our meetings here, and the colleagues who sat around this table. They didn't have the chance to, you know, just go out for a quick call in the mobile phone. They were taking notes and making sure that we get the most out of this conference. To Caroline, who has been helping us with coordinating and keeping us on track in order to finish on time and allow the discussion to flow also in an open and collegial manner. I want to thank very much to the colleagues in the technology. Without their support on my left hand and in the cameras, we wouldn't be able to do such a good job. But thank you so much for that. There is a lot that one can take out of such a conference. And one of the first things that come to my mind is that after several years, believe me, several years of learning, of walking this learning path around food security and other issues related to food security, I still feel like every time a colleague presents to us his or her job, the results of their efforts, I learn something new. I think that that is a very powerful thing. Every time I go to a poster by an undergrad or graduate student, there is a new message for me, something that perhaps I sense somewhere, but there it is, you know, on paper, on a picture, on a comment, or a new idea. And I think that this is the most exciting part of this type of meetings and the type of jobs we all have. We are here to learn, and hopefully in the best way possible, we are here to transmit some of what we have learned. We saw in the presentations different points of view. I don't want to repeat what my colleagues said already. We have a diverse conference, a broad range of opinions, and sometimes in a very collegial manner, we confronted ideas, and we were able to project that food security and the flip side of that coin, food insecurity, are a strategic issue for the survival, for the further development of the human society. I think that with the work that we saw in this conference, we saw an integration of science and art, because that's what we do. We try to integrate scientific work with what the art can provide us with as a tool and as a way, as an expression of humanism to work on these daunting challenges we are confronting. We are combining technology with humanism, and we are combining also moral with very practical issues. That's what I got out of this conference. I thank you very much for all the conversations we had during this conference, people coming to meet with me, or your openness when I came to you to introduce myself. I am looking forward to a very bright future in the work that we are conducting. And I really feel like this type of events provide the opportunity, again, to realize that we all come from the same place. And perhaps we should understand that we need to walk on the same path. I think we have no choice. So thank you very much again for such a great conference. Thank you, Dilma Ramudu.
Thank you very much, Hugo. So we have a few minutes now to open the floor for comments that you would like to leave with us. So the floor is yours, please. And Helen is going to take the notes so that we don't lose this when we produce our final report for the conference. And please introduce yourself. I know you did it several times during the conference, but please do it again so that Helen can record this for posterity.
Thank you. My name is Nurul Akhand. I'm from International Center for Biosaline Agriculture. Thank you, Dr. Chandra, for inviting me and my colleague to be here. And based on the discussion, what we have got idea of different angles, so it's a multidisciplinary, multi-sectoral approach to address the food security. And it is important that if you look at, as I'm representing, International Center of Biosaline Agriculture, our saline area, coastal belt, where we have farmers. So there is a question of investment in research and management in biosaline agriculture, and with the existing technology, how we can improve it. Of course, biosaline agriculture cannot compete with traditional agriculture. But for the marginal soil, with the marginal water, there is a potential scope to increase the water productivity, and especially forage. We had biofuel, that's another potential area. And with the climate change, the saline area is increasing day by day. So there is a potential candidate, biosaline agriculture, that can be linked with food security. So this is my one to say to you, and that could be one area we need to incorporate in this recommendation. Thank you, Chandra.
Thank you very much. President Gao.
Thank you. This is my second time attend McGill Global Food Security Conference. First of all, I'd like to express thanks to organizer and to Professor Sajimoto for organize this work fifth conference. And also, congratulations for your organize such a successful conference. This year, in China, we have a famous writer. He won the Nobel Prize this year. When he had an interview with a media journalist, journalist asked him what he will buy with his prize. I was surprised. He think he will buy enough food. So he think about 20 years or even 30 years ago, when he was a young man, things help him lost dignity, his food, because at that time China have serious food security problem. We do have a lot of people could not have enough food. Things he could not understand is same land, same water. Why 30 years later, China have so much food, so much cereals and other products. So actually, I think this is indicator how important food security. So I think with this Global Food Security Conference, so I think it's a way on the a way for the discovery of the solutions to a food security at the global level. As I mentioned, this is my second time attend Global Food Security Conference at McGill University. So I learned a lot and understand a lot, and also we discuss a lot about the solution to food to achieve food security. So I think with our discussion, and also I think it's a light for the future, which way we should go and what kind of difficulty we have to overcome to achieve food security. At this year, the food price and the food price volatility, I think it's an indicator of demand and production. So with this discussion at this forum, I think we learn a lot, and it will help us find a better solution for the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other comments? Yes, please, Galina.
Uh, I also want to say the thank you for invitation for this conference. Second time in a conference of food security, and for me, it's not only interesting, but it's very important because I work with the farmers, I work in the countryside, I work with the integrated water resource management, but I had a project with McGill University. It was addressing to drought in Central Asia, and we worked together with the students in the field. We planted soybean, and we showed the way to increase the soil productivity because the crop rotation now in Central Asia, in Uzbekistan, it's destroyed. We have only two plant, wheat and cotton, and we should to increase soil productivity. This one is the one way. It's very important to show this way for farmers. And instead, we organize the training for farmers, for water management, and for special for women farmers. For water management, for gender, its position, we learned to women's in farmers for position women, and maybe to support, maybe not like physically, but it's the psychology, like it's because it's now a situation in Central Asia, it's seems it's the big, it's a high level of migration. And now I think that we will include the special course for women training. It's for food security. And it's maybe we can to learn with this option. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce Moore. I've had the opportunity to travel the world and attend more conferences than I sometimes care to remember, so I don't make this comment lightly. The combination of ideas that came out in this conference were quite innovative, often in the way in which there was complementarity, but also in looking at how the various sectors could come together. I would find it a shame that the only people who will benefit from this may be people who will go to the website. Of course, I've only been here once and do not know how you promote this. But this is something that the results, illustrated somewhat by the wonderful summary we've seen, are messages that we need to get before many people, starting in particular with people that make decisions in our own country. So I would encourage that the communication people at McGill look deeply for ways to get these messages into the public domain. I could see, for instance, you, Dr. Chandra, with one of the other distinguished persons here, probably being quite successful, if you're not already doing it, to have a significant op-ed in the Globe and Mail to bring some of the messages out. It's not so much important that you cover all of the messages as it is that Canadians realize there's a strong constituency of people, from people who are going to be our future leaders as some of the young people in this room and carry this agenda forward, to the international nature of the people providing leadership in this university and the broad set of knowledge that you have. I just encourage that you look to try to bring this into the public domain. And I think you have people, including in your sponsors, groups that may co-author in order to show the broad base that you're able to attract. I think this would be a very important contribution to the wider public debate.
Thank you very much. Very, very good comment. Other comments? Yes, please. Charles.
Thank you. So, Charles Kunku from the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. I'd like to thank, it is my first time actually attending this conference, and it was very informative. I'm very grateful from the speakers and as well as from the students' work that was showcased here. One thing I've learned, and which makes it more valuable for me to be here, is that focusing on the price, the volatility of price of food price, which was actually the topic for this year's conference. I wish I could have left the conference with some answers, and actually I think I will. And I just want to share with the audience something I've gained from some experience working within the private sector. I actually worked in a brew house owned by Heineken Group, but we had this methodology of addressing issues and being very effective on finding solutions on a continuous improvement approach. And it led to applying this root analysis, root cause failure analysis. And in this process, you were asked actually to ask yourself 5 times why, and why about this and that. And most of the chance that the fifth explanation would actually be the root cause. And by putting effort and energy on this one, would likely ensure that solutions would be sustainable and would actually get rid of the problem for a long time. So my root cause analysis from the food price volatility I've learned from here takes me to this idea of the challenge of the way we are actually considering food as a commercial versus some more moral or ethical approach. And for me, this is what I've learned from this, and this is actually what I think would be considered as the root cause of whatever the food price volatility is bringing us challenge into the global food security process. So I just would like to share it and encourage whoever, all of us here actually, to think about that and likely put effort on changing mindsets and having people more and more considering use of addressing the food the food price volatility issue from this angle. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much. Other questions or comments? People would like to leave? None? Well, I don't want to keep you here longer than you need to be, but I do want to take this opportunity, since it is the time for me to hand over the baton to the new director, to say to you that it has been a pleasure for me over the past 5 years to organize and lead these conferences. I've enjoyed it. I'm not going away. I will still be there, but very, very far in the background, so that the new leadership and his colleagues can take the conferences and the institute to an even greater height than we have done in the past. In closing, let me say that we've had 197 people at the public lecture, 262 people attended at various times during the conference. We had speakers and participants from some 15 countries representing a range of different sectors, from government to private sector to international agencies and NGOs. So quite a significant breadth of experts that we've had, and not to forget also our students. And I want to echo what our speakers said about the quality of our student presentations and the quality of our students here at McGill, that we're very proud of the work that you do here in the university. I'd like to thank our sponsors who are on the boards, and to mention them, you'll see them also on the program, the Syngenta Foundation, IDRC, the Ministry of International Relations of Quebec, ICA, and also Urban Barnes for their support, and the many donors who provided additional support in one way or another to the conference. I don't know, Eduardo, if you could please round up the ladies just behind you, outside, please, Eduardo. Eduardo's sleeping. Or Sylvia, please. Can you ask Kim and company to come in, please? And Joanne. As you know, a conference like this cannot be done without the excellent support and logistics provided by our staff. And I want to recognize Kim, who I would say is the brainchild behind the conference and its success. Thank you, Kim. Sharon, also from our Global Food Security Office. And I see that Eduardo has disappeared, or he's trying to find Joanne. They're both. So thank you, Eduardo, and thank you, Joanne. Pardon me? And Lynn, yes, I have Lynn's name down here. And Lynn, who was here with us yesterday. Caroline, there you are. Caroline, thank you. And Caroline is responsible for recruiting a host of student volunteers. Thank you, Caroline, if you could say our thanks to the volunteers who helped as well.
Please.
Thank you. And last but not least, I'd like to thank all our participants, you, the participants, the speakers, who, as we've all heard, presented some very enlightening talks. We certainly appreciate your participation, taking time from your busy schedules to be with us. Following from what Bruce Moore said, Helen and I will be working on the summary. Much of it was in the slides, but we'll do something a bit larger for you, and it will be posted on our website, and you will all get an email, since we have your email addresses, you will all get an email when we publish it, and also all the presentations will be on the website as well. And I think, Caroline, we're going to convert we're going to have the video, audio and video, will be converted and put on the web. And the posters will go up as well. So you'll get all the materials from the conference that you can keep for your own use and record. So as I said, colleagues, we thank you. We hope you filled out the forms because we do use those forms to improve the evaluations, to improve the format of the conferences. It has been a real pleasure for me to be associated with this for the past 5 years. I look forward to seeing how it will evolve in the future. We will obviously use the comments and so on, and we will also do some rethinking of how we want to do this in the future, other formats. I should mention to you that through the generosity of Margaret Gillam, we've also obtained funding and out funding for a seminar speaker series, and we will be doing more seminar speakers on our campus at McDonald over the course of the year. The next speaker the first speaker was actually Marco Ferroni earlier this winter from the Syngenta Foundation. Our next speaker will be on November 1st on the McDonald campus. I'd ask you to look on the website. It'll be Dr. Nwanze, the president of IFAD, will give a talk to our staff and students at McDonald, but you're all invited to come. So I certainly recommend that you look at our website and see the speakers that will be coming fairly frequently through the Margaret Gillam Endowment to speak at the campus on food security. So all that remains for me is to once again thank you and to wish you bon voyage. Merci beaucoup.